Pharaoh wore the Nemes crown and carried the scepter, but behind the pomp and the regalia he was still a little old man with a pot belly and a sad face. I could not help but think of the other bridegroom who might have stood under the canopy beside my mistress, if only the gods had been kinder. Pharaoh's ministers and high officials attended him so closely that my view of my mistress was obscured. Despite the fact that it was I who had been forced to arrange every detail of it, I was excluded from the wedding, and I had only glimpses of my Lady Lostris during the ceremony. The high priest of Osiris washed the hands and the feet of both the bride and the groom with water freshly drawn from the Nile, to symbolize the purity of their union. Then the king broke a morsel from the ritual corn loaf and offered it to his young bride as a pledge. I glimpsed my mistress's face as he placed the crust between her lips. She could neither chew nor swallow, but stood with it in her mouth as though it were a stone. Once again she was hidden from my view, and it was only when I heard the crunch of the empty jug that had contained the marriage wine, as the bridegroom shattered it with a blow of his sword, that I knew that it was done, and that Lostris was for evermore beyond the reach of Tanis' arms. The crowd beneath the canopy opened, and Pharaoh led his newest bride forward to the front of the platform to present her to the people. They showed their love for Lostris in a chorus of adulation that went on until my ears rang and my head swam. I wanted to escape from the press and go to find Tanis, although I knew that he had been released from detention and was once again at liberty. He had not attended the ceremony. He was perhaps the only man in Thebes who had not come to the riverside today. I knew that wherever he might be, he stood in as dire need of me as I was of him. The only small comfort that either of us might find on this tragic day was with each other. However, I could not tear myself away. I had to see it out to the final harrowing moment. At last my Lord Intef came forward to take his farewell of his daughter. As the crowd subsided into silence, he embraced her. Lostris was like a corpse in his embrace. Her arms hung limply at her side, and her face was pale as death. Her father released her, but kept a grip on her hand as he turned and faced the congregation to offer the ritual gift to his daughter. Traditionally, this gift was made over and above the dowry that went directly to the bridegroom. However, only the nobility observed this custom, which was designed to give the bride an independent income. "Now that you go from my house and from my protection to the house of your husband, I bestow upon you the gift of parting, that you will remember me always as the father that loved you." The words were inappropriate to the circumstances, I thought bitterly. My Lord Intef had never loved another living soul. However, he continued the ancient formula, as though the sentiments were his own. "Ask any boon of me, my beloved child. I will refuse you nothing on this joyous day." It was the usual practice for the extent of the gift to be agreed in private between father and daughter, before the ceremony. In this case, however, my Lord Intef had told his daughter unequivocally what she was entitled to ask for. He had done me the honour of discussing the matter with me the previous day, before informing Lostris of his decision. "I don't want to be extravagant, but on the other hand, I do not wish to appear parsimonious in Pharaoh's eyes," he had mused. "Let us say 5,000 gold rings and 50 fedan of land, not on the riverfront, mind you." He had, with my prompting, finally decided on 5,000 gold rings and 100 fedan of prime, irrigable land as being a suitable gift for a royal wedding. On his instruction, I had already drawn up the deed of grant for the land and set aside the gold from a secret store that my master kept out of the way of the tax collectors. The matter was settled. It remained only for Lostris to give voice to the request before her groom and all the wedding guests, but she stood pale and silent and withdrawn, seeming neither to see nor hear what was going on around her. "Speak up, my child. What is it that you desire from me?" My Lord Intef's tones of paternal love were becoming strained, and he shook his daughter's hand to rouse her. "Come, tell your father what he can do to make this happy day complete." My Lady Lostris stirred as though coming awake from a dreadful dream. She looked about her, and her tears welled up and threatened to break over her quivering eyelids. She opened her mouth to speak, but what came from her throat was the weak little cry of a wounded bird. She closed her lips again and shook her head speechlessly. "Come, child, speak out." My Lord Intef was having difficulty sustaining an expression of paternal affection. "Name your marriage gift, and I will give it to you, whatever it is that you desire." The effort that Nostris had to make was apparent to me, even though I stood so far from her. But this time, when she opened her mouth, her request rang out over our heads, clear as the music of the lyre. There could have not been a soul in the crowd who did not hear every word of it. "For my gift, give me the slave, Taita." My lord Intef reeled back a pace, as though she had thrust a dagger into his belly. He stared at her aghast, his mouth opening and closing without a sound escaping. Only he and I knew the value of the gift that Lostris had demanded. Not even he, with the store of wealth and treasure that he had garnered over a lifetime, could afford such a payment. He recovered swiftly. His expression was once more calm and benign, though his lips stretched tight. "You are too restrained, my darling daughter. A single slave is no fitting gift for Pharaoh's bride. Such stinginess is not in my nature. I would rather you accepted a gift of real value, 5,000 rings of gold at—" "Father, you have always been too generous with me, but I want only Taita." My lord Intef smiled a white smile, white teeth, white lips, and white rage. While he still stared at Lostris, I could see that his mind was racing. I was the most valuable of all his possessions. It was not simply my wide range of extraordinary talents that made up the full measure of my worth to him. Even more, it was that I knew intimately every convoluted thread of the intricate tapestry of his affairs. I knew every informer and spy in his network, every person whom he had ever bribed and who had bribed him. I knew which favours were outstanding on each account, which favours remained to be settled, and which grudges were still to be paid off. I knew all his enemies, a long list, and I knew those he counted his friends and allies, a much shorter list. I knew where every nugget of his vast treasure was hidden, who were his bankers and his agents and his nominees, and how he had concealed the ownership of great tracts of land and stores of precious metals and gemstones in the legal labyrinth of deeds and titles and servitudes. All of this was information that would delight the tax collectors and cause Pharaoh to revise his opinion of his grand vizier. I doubted that my lord Intef himself could remember and trace all his wealth without my assistance. He could not properly order and control his sprawling, shadowy empire without me, for he had kept himself aloof and separated from the most unsavoury aspects of it. He had preferred to send me to take care of those details which, if discovered, might incriminate him. So it was that I knew 1,000 dark secrets, and I knew of 1,000 fearful deeds, of embezzlement and extortion, of robbery and bloodiest murder, all of which taken together could destroy even a man as powerful as the Grand Vizier. I was indispensable. He could not let me go. And yet, before Pharaoh and the entire population of Thebes, he could not deny Lostris her request. My lord Intef is a man full of ire and hatred. I have seen such rage in him that must have made Seth, the god of anger, start up and take notice. But I had never seen such fury as now, when his own daughter had him cornered. "Let the slave Taita stand forward," he called, and I saw that it was a ruse for him to gain a respite. I pushed my way as swiftly as I was able to the foot of the wedding platform, to give him as little time as possible to plan his next mischief. "I am here, my lord," I cried, and he stared down at me with those deadly eyes. We have been together so long that he can speak to me with a look almost as clearly as with the spoken word. He stared at me in silence until my heart was racing and my fingers fluttered with fear. Then at last he said in soft, almost affectionate tones, "Taita, you have been with me since you were a child. I have come to regard you as a brother more than as a slave. Still, you have heard my daughter's request. I am by nature a fair and kind man. After all the years, it would be inhuman of me to discard you against your wishes. I know that it is unusual for a slave to be given a say in his own disposal. But then your circumstances are indeed unusual. Choose, Taita. If you wish to stay in your home, the only home you have ever known, then I cannot find the heart to send you away. Not even at the request of my own daughter." He never took his eyes off me, those terrible yellow eyes. I am not a coward, but I am careful of my safety. I realized that I was staring into the eyes of death, and I could not find my voice. I tore my gaze from his, and looked towards my lady Lostris. There was such appeal there, such loneliness and terror, that my own safety counted for nothing. I could not desert her now, not at any price or under any threat. How can a poor slave deny the wish of Pharaoh's wife? I am ready to do the bidding of my new mistress, I cried out at the top of my lungs, and I hoped that my voice had a manly ring to it, and was not as shrill as it sounded in my own ears. Come, slave, my new mistress ordered, take your place behind me. As I mounted the platform, I was forced to pass close to my lord Intef. His white, stiff lips barely moved as he spoke for my ears alone. Farewell, my old darling. You are a dead man. I shuddered, as though a poisonous cobra had slid across my path, and I hurried to take my place in the retinue of my mistress, as though I truly believed that I could find safety in her protection. I stayed close to Lostris during the rest of the ceremony, and I waited on her personally at the wedding feast, hovering at her elbow and trying to make her eat a little of the meats and fine fare that was spread before her. She was so wan and sickly that I was certain that she had eaten nothing in the last 2 days, not since her betrothal and the condemnation of Tanus. In the end, I succeeded in getting her to take a little watered wine, but that was all. Pharaoh saw her drink and thought that she was toasting him. He lifted his own gold chalice and smiled at her over the rim as he returned the toast, and the wedding guests cheered the couple delightedly. Taita, she whispered to me as soon as the king's attention was diverted by the Grand Vizier, who sat on his other hand. I fear that I am going to vomit. I cannot stay here another moment. Please take me back to my chamber. It was an impudence and a scandal, and had I not been able to adopt the role of surgeon, I could never have achieved it. But I was able to creep on my knees to the king's side and to whisper to him without causing an undue comment amongst the wedding guests, most of whom were well along in wine at this stage. As I grew to know him better, I found that Pharaoh was a kindly man, and this was the first proof he gave me of it. He listened to my explanations and then clapped his hands and addressed the guests. "My bride will go to her chamber now to prepare for the night ahead," he told them, and they leered and greeted the announcement with lewd comment and lascivious applause. I helped my mistress to her feet, but she was able to make her obeisance to the king and leave the banquet hall without my support. In her bedchamber she threw up the wine she had drunk into the bowl that I held for her, and then she collapsed upon the bed. The wine was all her stomach contained, and my suspicion that she had been starving herself was confirmed. "I don't want to live without Tanus." Her voice was weak, but I knew her well enough to recognize that her will was as strong as ever. "Tanus is alive," I tried to console her. "He is strong and young and will live for another 50 years. He loves you, and he promises to wait for you to the end of time. The king is an old man. He cannot live forever." She sat up on the fur bed cover, and her voice became stern and determined. "I am Tanus, woman, and no other man shall have me. I would rather die." "We all die in the end, mistress. If only I could distract her for the first few days of this marriage, I knew I could see her through. But she understood me too well. I know what you are up to, but all your pretty words will do you no good. I am going to kill myself. I order you to prepare a draught of poison for me to drink." "Mistress, I am not versed in the science of poison." It was a forlorn attempt, and she crushed it effortlessly. "Many is the time that I have seen you give poison to a suffering animal. Do you not remember your old dog, the one with abscesses in its ears, and your pet gazelle that was mauled by a leopard? You told me that the poison was painless, that it was the same as going to sleep. Well, I want to go to sleep and be embalmed and go on to the other world to wait for Tanus there." I had to try other persuasion. "But what about me, mistress? You have only this day taken possession of me. How can you abandon me? What will become of me without you? Have pity on me." I saw her waver, and I thought I had her, but she lifted her chin stubbornly. "You'll be all right, Taita. You will always be all right. My father will take you back gladly after I am dead. Please, my little one," I used the childhood endearment in a last attempt to cajole her, "let us talk of this in the morning. Everything will be different in the sunlight." "It will be the same," she contradicted me. "I will be parted from Tanus, and that wrinkled old man will want me in his bed to do horrid things to me." Her voice was raised so that the other members of the king's harem might hear every word. Fortunately, most of them were still at the wedding feast, but I trembled at the thought of her description of him being relayed to Pharaoh.